Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, in my hometown. Out there on the edge of the prairie. It's been warm and humid this last week, and we've gotten a lot of rain, which has been good for the gardens in my town, and I do come from a town of gardeners. It also meant that they finally caught those boys who've been driving around late at night out in the country busting up mailboxes with baseball bats. They got hung up on the shoulder of the county road north of town, and it took them a while to push themselves out late one night, and in the confusion, they forgot the baseball bat, and it had one boy's initials on it. So the long arm of the law reached out to these boys, and they were good about it. They're our boys. They didn't lie. They didn't cringe. They didn't whine. They didn't blame other people. They didn't have any excuse. They said, "I'm very sorry," each of them said. And we know that they are, because to replace 84 mailboxes, to dig new post holes, put the posts in and get them just the right height so the box is opposite the window of the mailman's car, that's quite a job. They'll have a long, long summer ahead of them. It's been good for the gardens. The tomatoes have been coming right along, and the strawberries too. And the vines have been so lush. All the trees, all the vegetation in Lake Wobegon. Gary and Leroy, after they caught the boys who'd been busting up mailboxes, were called to go up to Mr. Berge's house to tell him to turn the video down. His windows were open, and the man is about half deaf anyway. And it was the kind of video that nobody sells in our town. At first, people weren't sure that what that was. Men moaning and women squealing in a kind of ecstatic way. And we had to go up and tell the poor old man. So lush, so beautiful, you could almost forgive him for it. The honeysuckle vine and mingling with all of the other vines in the morning glory. Clarence Bunsen went out and looked at his strawberry patch early on Sunday morning, and it was just all red with gigantic berries. Biggest he'd ever seen. He picked two quarts without any trouble at all, just covered about half of the patch. He looked across over his fence toward the garden of his arch rival gardener, his sister-in-law, Irene, and he noticed how big her tomato plants are, and he felt this wave of tomato envy cross his mind. Big plants, and he could look and see that they actually had little green tomatoes on them. His are rather puny and just are starting to blossom. He noticed that she had staked them up this last week, and they weren't just wooden stakes, but they were red plastic stakes, and they had black wires coming down from them. She tied the tomato plants up to them. She'd been also spraying them with an aerosol can. And he was curious. So he stayed home from church that morning. Arlene went, and he waited for Irene and Clint to go, and then he let himself through the gate and into their garden. And he saw that these stakes were a kind of stake that transmits a low-frequency radio signal down into the dirt. The brand name is Earthwave, and it stimulates the genetic material of the tomato that causes growth. He sniffed them to see what this aerosol was that she'd used on the plants, and he sniffed a faint essence of strawberry. Interesting. He went back to his yard, looked at his miserable tomatoes, and then the Anderson's dog, their big dog Bruno, came bounding up the alley, and Clarence said, "Hey, Bruno, come here." And he picked up his stick, and he made a throwing motion a couple of times, to get the dog excited, and then he lobbed it over into Irene's tomato patch, and the dog raced, and he cleared the fence, and he dashed into the tomato patch, and he put on the brakes, and he skidded kind of sideways, and he wiped out about two or three plants. He brought the stick back to Clarence. Clarence tossed it one more time. The dog made one more bombing run, brought the stick back, and Clarence had his arm cocked to throw it one more time, and somebody said, "Why, good morning." And he turned, and it was his neighbor on the other side, Mrs. Schoenecker. He kept his arm back, and he reached down and scratched his back with a stick. She said, "I never have seen strawberries do so well as your strawberries." He gave her a quart as a bribe. She took the largest berry out of the quart, and she took a bite out of it, and she said, "I've never tasted a strawberry so good as this. So sweet. Here, you've got to taste this." She handed it to him. He thought, Sunday morning, there must be a verse in Scripture somewhere that warns us against accepting a strawberry that has been bitten into by a married woman. Maybe something in the book of Genesis. But he took the other half of the strawberry and he ate it. And it was so good. Mrs. Schoenecker is the wife of George Schoenecker. He's the manager of the Lake Wobegon Whippets baseball team, but he works as a janitor at the Women's Lingerie Catalog Warehouse in St. Cloud, Elizabeth's mystery. And about two years ago, Clarence was up late at night looking in the medicine cabinet for a bicarbonate, and he turned to his left and he got 1 second's glimpse of Mrs. Schoenecker walking down the upstairs hall of her house, and she just passed by an open door, and she was wearing this filmy, silky, see-through, clingy, green thing, cut very short, and he could see her chicken legs, but he was stunned by the voluptuousness of his neighbor. Ever since then, every time he's run into her at Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery or at the baseball game, he's always seen her in a green nightie. The Whippets started their season. They have not been doing that well. Mr. Schoenecker has been trying to instill a little pride in the team, which is no easy task when a team has finished dead last 9 years in a row. But they have a new pitcher now, a fastball pitcher, Whiplash, young kid, brave kid, stands up there, throws the ball hard, and so gone is Ernie and his 45-mile-an-hour fastball, and here's a guy who really can pitch, and he's not afraid to throw high inside pitches, so he doesn't let the hitters dig in. He makes them respect him, and that's a good start. So there's some hope for the Whippets this year. And George thought maybe some mottos might improve it. So he painted on the back of the dugout, TPMTP, total preparation means top performance. And then on the first step, he printed MDMD, maximum desire, minimize defeat. Kind of slogans to give the guys something to think about. And they were doing pretty well this last Sunday, and the game was still within reach. They were behind 4-3. It was the eighth inning, and up comes Larry Lineman to bat, the second baseman. Larry the Looker, they call him, because last year he led the league in called third strikes. He came up, and he popped a little single out to right field, and parked himself on first base and stood there while Wayne Warningtrack Tom Adol hit a towering pop fly to the pitcher. And then Ronnie came up And he went down on a swinging third strike, and the third strike, and Larry trotted towards the dugout. Well, the Flyers grabbed the ball, put it on his big bite, and he was out, third out. George couldn't believe it. He said, "What were you thinking about out there?" "I don't know, Coach," he said. "Larry said, I don't know. I was just dreaming." "Dreaming? Dreaming takes brains. What are you dreaming about? You're about as focused as a fart. You're just a disgrace to the whole team." George was just so upset about it. And Whiplash, the new pitcher, came up on the mound, and he, first batter came up, and George was walking up and down. He was kicking the bench and kicking the steps. And the very first Flyer that came up to bat lashed a line drive foul ball. It caromed off a post in the Whippets dugout, and it hit George right upside the head. He fell down. He lay down for a while. When he got up, he had a headache. He sat there holding ice to the side of his head. He sat on the bench, and he looked at the letters on the dugout step. M.D., M.D., and he couldn't remember what they meant. Orville Tollison was sitting next to him. He said, "Orv, what does that stand for? M.D., M.D.?" And Orv said, "I think it means many do, most don't." They lost the game, 5-3. So, Sunday afternoon, George was sitting out in his backyard, and his neighbor Clarence came leaned on his fence. She said, "Heard it was a good ball game," he said to George. He said, "I meant to go, but I had to go help my sister-in-law with her tomatoes because a dog got in the patch and wound up knocking out a number of them. And you know, she's got these steaks there, these steaks that emit radio waves. I was trying to tell her that I'd read articles about this that say that it increases the tendency towards gum cancer, but she didn't care. It was beautiful, those strawberries. Those are the best strawberries that anybody ever had. A backyard is kind of a utopia, you know. We have big backyards in Lake Wobegon, the way this town was laid out. You'll have a patch of grass, and then a place for the clothesline and the clothes poles, and then you have room for about 40, 50 feet of garden, and then you have the garage sitting there on the alley. People were idealists. When you walk around our town, you can see that a lot of these utopias have not worked out at all. But people do keep trying. Just because of the pure sensual pleasure of fresh vegetables. We look forward to it all winter and all spring. There simply is nothing like it. A fresh strawberry that you've picked up from the plant and you've just brushed the dust off it and it's still warm from the sun. You put it in your mouth. And this is as sensuous as life is allowed to become. A fresh tomato that's been sitting in the sun is warm. You snap it off the vine, and you brush the dust off on your shirt, and you bite into it, a real tomato, and you let the juice run down your chin. Hard to keep your mind on the epistles of St. Paul when you... I remember one June I was in college. I was depressed because I owed money and because I was failing my courses at the University of Minnesota. And so as I often did when I felt bad because I was poor, I spent money. I took the train down to Chicago. I loved Chicago, just to walk around the North Side and look at some movies. And on the north side of Chicago, I ran into a classmate of mine, another English major, a woman I had admired from afar, and she was sitting at a restaurant with
her boyfriend, who was a senior at Northwestern, a pre-med student, and who looked at me with such haughty disdain that I felt obligated to join them at the table. Well, she was stunned to see me. Not that we were in love or anything, we weren't at all, but just the coincidence that two people from Miss Youngblood Shakespeare class should meet at the same corner on the north side of Chicago. I sat down with them, and she was eating an immense fruit salad. She said, "I'm going back on the train tonight, the North Coast Limited." I said, "I am too. What a coincidence." Well, that really got her boyfriend upset. I excused myself and went to the men's room, and when I got back, they were kind of hissing at each other. I stood off to the side, and I pretended to look at some posters. He was really furious at her. He walked out on her. He walked past me. I said, "Nice to meet you." And she and I got on the train together. We sat together in the coach. She had a whole quart of strawberries with her. We ate those strawberries all the way up to Minnesota. And we talked and we kissed to exchange the taste of strawberries. And we slept together in the seat. I guess she was the first woman I ever slept with. I associated all with the taste of strawberries. And if I have one, the whole experience comes back to me. It's so vivid. My town is a town of gardeners, people who get down on their knees and are involved with dirt. People wouldn't understand that in New York City. Most dirt that you'd get involved with in New York City, other people have already been involved with, and you wouldn't care to yourself. But we do in our town, and so our town is not a going out to dinner town. If you want to experience the best of our town, you have to get on the good side of people who have a garden at this time of year. And in July and August, if you sit down to Sunday dinner, forget about the pork roast, forget about the chicken. You sit down and have the creamed peas that were on the vine that morning with onions, baby onions, in a cream sauce that your aunt makes. And you have absolutely fresh tomatoes, and you have fresh sweet corn that's just minutes from the stalk, quickly boiled and briefly prayed over and set out on a platter and slathered with butter and with salt. You realize that there is nothing in the world that can compare to slightly undercooked vegetables, fresh from the garden. All of the sauces and all of the seasonings and all of the artistry of chefs in the world is purely remedial to make up for inferior supplies. This, what anybody with a little wit and a little industry can make for themselves, is the best thing that you could possibly eat. And so lush, so delicious, so sensuous, that I'm losing my mind talking to you about it right now. And have no idea where this story goes. Mr. Bergie, stayed out of the Mr. Bergie stayed away from the sidetrack tap. He kept pretty much to himself, knowing that the story of the video would have circulated and people would have heard about it. And he waited until Friday to show his face, and he walked in for lunch on Friday afternoon at the Sidetrack Tap, said hello to Wally behind the bar. They were all there. George Honecker was there, and Ronnie was there from the Whippets, and Carl Kretschbach, and Carl's brother-in-law, Lyle, and several other friends. They're all sitting at the bar, drinking their Wendy's beer. Mr. Berge walked in very quietly, not saying anything to anybody. And as he walked past them, all of the men at the bar began to sigh and began to moan. Oh. Oh. Hmm. Oh.
That's the news from Lake Wobegon. All the women are strong. All the men are good looking. And all the children are bugged out.